Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Inner Fight Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Today's guest, some of you who have been listening to the show for a short time or 4 years may have or may remember. You may have heard him before. If you're part of the Inner Fight Endurance community, you will have definitely heard, seen, maybe even run or ridden your bike or swum with him. We spoke to him in, towards the end of, when did the pandemic end? Towards 4 years ago in June of 2020, episode 638, which you may want to go back and listen to because some of the things that he's going to speak about today would have a little bit more context if you heard that show. As a little warning, that the quality of the audio on that show was absolutely terrible. It's when Zoom was still trying to figure out how Zoom worked. However, today he is back after an incredible journey over the last 3.5 years, putting together his thoughts, his experiences, things that he wants to share with people in a book. I think it might be the first... maybe the first person who has written a book who's come on the show to talk about it. I might be wrong, and I do apologize if I'm wrong. However, it's the latest book release that someone's actually come to my show to talk about rather than going on all of the big shows. In this book, he shares, as I said, life lessons. Some of it was simply a little bit of therapy for him to process what's gone on. But in processing what's gone on, he believes that he's able to help some people. And as you'll hear in today's show, I think that's super true. He's got some great thoughts, some great concepts, and he's just a nice guy to chat to. We actually spent as much time chatting after the show as we did recording the show. This week's show announcements. First up, a big shout out to everybody who supported Carmen's brother, Gael, last weekend in the Ultra Bozathlon. What did we go for? Just under 24 hours, I think 20 hours, kicked off at 4 p.m. on Saturday. There was loads and loads of people doing burpees, rowing, running, ski, and bike. Gael did 3,000 burpees solo as part of his challenge. Absolutely sensational effort. He didn't manage to get what he wanted, which was to complete the whole challenge in 24 hours, but he did finish the whole thing in a little bit over 24 hours. If you still want to support what he's done, it's a great cause to walk again. And from him, I know he's very appreciative to everybody within our community who showed up and offered their support, did a few reps, got involved. It was a huge weekend down here. So thank you to everyone who got involved in that. In another country, not so far away, in Doha last weekend, we have to congratulate Ala, Jess, and Jake on their performance at High Rocks. It was High Rocks in Doha last weekend, and good performances there actually may have earned them some potential to compete in the World Championships in Nice, I believe. More about that later. I'm sure Jess, once she's recovered, will tell us all about that. But Jess placed third out of the elite women. So still up there with the elites. Not sure if you remember, but a few months ago, she was in Washington where I think she was in the top 10 in the world for elite women. So High Rocks is in the region. Jess is insanely good at it. And it was great to see Jake and Ala travel over to Doha as well. Keeping it competition, last weekend saw the age group semi-final qualifiers for the CrossFit Games. This is the third of four steps. If you follow Inner Fight over on Instagram, you'll have seen that my good wife was competing. She competes in 45 to 49. I think she's maybe got one or two more years left in that one. And she put on a lovely show for us, four workouts over 5 days. The open age group, so for the masses, actually takes place this weekend, which is not locally here in Dubai. It is all locations around the world. Best thing to do is hop over either on YouTube, games.crossfit.com, or go to their website, and then you'll get their YouTube channel, live feed, or CrossFit Games, I think is what they are on YouTube. CrossFit Games on Instagram as well. You'll see all of the top athletes in the world competing this weekend for their place in the CrossFit Games finals, which is in the States in August. We actually have a show coming in a couple of weeks with hopefully Andy and Simon talking about what's happened since we had Toby on the show a lot at the start of the year talking about the CrossFit Games season. We're going to have a little bit of an update with those two guys. Semi-finals weekend, it's huge for these guys that train. If you like watching people get super tired and lifting massive big weights, pretty much every single region is broadcast, I think live actually, over on YouTube, CrossFit Games YouTube channel. That's it for this week's show announcements. Let's get into the show. This is episode number 904 of the Inner Fight Podcast. No matter where you are in the world, thanks a lot for tuning in. Let's jump into today's show. Let's kick off. Darren, welcome back to the show. It's been 4 years.
It's been 4 years. 600 something, I remember.
600. I've got it written down. I can't remember. 638. So I want to kick off, mate, with what might seem like, this isn't in my notes and I didn't tell you this, but what is time?
You didn't tell me anything.
I didn't tell you anything. My first question is, what is time?
What is time? I think time is a construct that's very personal. Like, if you think about time, like, the way I experience time is going to be very different from how you experience time. I always wonder, how is it that there's some people that get so much stuff done while others don't? And I think it really comes down to how we experience time. I mean, yes, there's the objective time that we, or most people, follow.
We'll come to that.
But I think it's really an internal representation of, or it's an experience that we all have, and it's shaped by our journey, our conditioning, our programming, which is why some people get more done than others. And if we could take this further, it's, you know, you're either in time or you're on time. So, you know, right. I used to wake up in a rush. Like, you know, I would wake up in a rush. And I was just talking about this the other day, how I think that's the biggest threat that we face, is just waking up in a rush. Because you wake up in a rush, now your state, how you're thinking and feeling, is already in that disempowered. You already feel like you're behind the curve. You're not in time, you're kind of on time. You're not in it, you're on it, and you know, in some way it's dragging you.
That's mental. When did you realize that you were waking up in that state?
I think it was between 2010 and 2014. I went through this really dark phase. I call it the dark night of the soul. And we spoke about this.
Yeah, we did.
And, you know, it was at that phase wherein everything changed for me. It was a complete transformation of how I experienced time. And so just going back to your question about, you know, when you're rushed in the morning, and I found that I was rushed, it then affected the story that I was starting to tell myself. Because now the story is, I never have enough time. I'm behind on this. I need to get that done. I need to return this call, respond to that email. I'm reacting to time, which then affects how I execute my day. Right, so I think it's Tony Robbins who talks about state. Your state affects the story you tell yourself, which affects the strategy and how you execute the day. And so I'm big on, I mean, we talk about this all the time, about, you know, those micro morning routines to really just get yourself into the right state. I mean, journaling, for example, or just being with yourself with a cup of coffee and taking that time.
We own it ultimately because we decide as human beings how we behave. But a lot of people would argue that the world has moved in a way that we have those things that you said. We have messages to return. We have calls to return. Like, we're going to sit here now. We've just started. We're 5 minutes in. In 55 minutes time, you're very popular. I'm not quite as popular. So you'll have,
I don't know about that,
quadruple the amount of WhatsApps that I'd have. But as soon as we finish, like this hour that we're spending together, once it's done, we know things are waiting for us. It could be missed calls. It could be one. It could be a couple of WhatsApp messages, all various modes of communication. And I mean, it can go on and on and on, can't it? Because once you finish phone calls, we go to SMS, then we go to WhatsApp, then we might check LinkedIn, then we've got email. We've come to this weird point.
We have. I mean, where there's so much that, I mean, everything is designed to hijack our attention. Like, literally everything. And I think it's important. For me, I could just speak from my experience and what I've observed with people that I work with is that it really comes down to, what do you want? You know, what do you want? And just being really clear that every time I say yes to something, I'm saying no to something else. So what is that trade-off that I'm making? And if I need to spend half an hour catching up, that's okay. As long as it's a choice I'm making and I'm conscious, I'm big on it. You know, what is the intention, right? If the intention is, if you're not even clear on what the intention is, right? And you're just doing it because it's trending, then that can become a slippery slope. But if you're actually leveraging it and utilizing, because these tools can also make us very productive. It's a platform for us to make an impact, right? Like what you guys have done on social media, it's phenomenal. And people look at that and it makes their lives better. So it really comes down to what the intention is. And if you're clear on the intention, then these tools can be very powerful and empowering.
But that comes back to probably the hardest question, which you just came up with there, is what do you actually want? And for someone to figure out what they want is not easy. Do you know what you want?
I know my values. I'm big on values. And my values shape what I want. But ultimately, what I want, ultimately, I mean, putting the goals aside, right? We all have goals. Yeah. We have things, we have priorities. We have things that we want to achieve. But ultimately, what I want is freedom. I'm here today because I want to be here today, not because I'm obligated to be here today. I'm trying to eliminate, and I still have commitments on my calendar that stem from obligation because I feel like I have to. I don't want to. Oh. And that's what I'm trying to optimize for. I'm trying to optimize for getting myself in a position wherein I don't have obligations and everything that I'm doing is because I want to do it and it brings me peace of mind.
When does something move? Because this is really interesting, right? When does something move from being an obligation to wanting to do it? And can they happen concurrently?
Can they happen? No, I think it's binary. I think either you want to or you don't.
Nice.
Right? Like, I mean, I think the name of the author is, he wrote the book called Essentialism.
Right.
And as you know, I'm big on essentialism.
Yeah.
And Stephen McEwen is the name of the author. And he talks about how things are either a hell yeah, or they're a hell no, right? You either want to do it and you're excited and your neurology, you can feel it in your body at the cellular level that you want to do it, or you don't. And so I think your body keeps giving you feedback. you know, subconsciously, whether you are doing something because you're obligated to or because you're really excited to do it.
Then it comes pretty fast to awareness, right? Because I'd say, someone who's been on this amazing journey, and you touched on it before, and we spoke about it a lot in a very poor audio quality show number 694. Is amazing in 4 years at that time how much audio quality has changed. Hopefully the guys building upstairs are not going to interrupt with this show. But you have, because the journey you've been on, you have awareness. You can sit there and you can say, it depends how it feels on a cellular level, was what you just said. And someone's listening and going, what the fuck does that mean?
Mm.
Like, literally, people are going, like, what does that actually mean? Like, people say, like, I have to make decisions based on a feel, but I don't feel anything. Like, help me, Darren, I don't feel anything, sort of thing. It's a weird scenario, right? And I'm sure with the kind of work that you're doing now and where your interest is at, you must come across that a lot.
Yeah. So what I mean by when I say you feel it at a cellular level, you feel it in your body. Like, you feel whether it's something that you're doing because it gets you, it's exciting, it's something that is aligned with your values, or if it's something that's not. I think that to me, let me ask you a question. Are there things that you do which you're not sure if you're excited about, or you're doing it because you have to do it?
I'm not going to answer. No, I'll tell you, honestly, mate, I'm on a constant quest that's actually why I'm driving this a little bit. This is therapy for me as well, right? Because I'm exactly the same. I don't ever want to feel that I'm obligated to do something. I'm here today. I called you. We locked this in because I want to have this conversation. You could be with 300,000 other people. Not, you could be with 10 other people right now, and I could have someone else sat in that chair. But I wanted to speak to you. So I don't feel any obligation to be here to doing it. And I'm excited and I'm relaxed and all these things. And when I'm doing things, there's certain things that systems that we've put in the company and interventions that we've put in the company that work. But then if I walk into it some days and I think I feel on a cellular level, same as what you're talking about. I don't feel it's right. I don't feel my energy's right or the team's energy's right. I'll review it and we won't do it. And I think that's where sometimes people are like, we've decided to do this, we have to stick with it, quitting is weakness. Actually, continuing to do something that you don't enjoy is weakness.
That's weakness.
Yeah. Like, that is weakness.
Yeah, that resonates.
So to answer your question, I think we're very similar on it in that sometimes there are things that I feel a little bit more obligated than excited about.
Yeah.
However, if I revisit why we're actually doing that thing and sometimes just zoom out a little bit, you know, and this could be anything. Like, you train with us endurance. I would say out of 52 coffee runs a year, I probably love 51.5 of them because I love running and I love the community. But I only love it because sometimes I'm able to zoom out. And sometimes, and I think every athlete who has a decent amount of awareness does it, and I see it throughout the year, runs alone at some point. There's a reason for that, because they're not feeling the tribe on that day.
Yeah.
Now,
I've been there.
I could feel, you've been there, but you've still shown up. And you've gone for a run.
Yeah.
And you might have just left.
Yeah.
You might not have had any community interaction. But what got you there, you've managed to zoom out. So you felt an obligation because your coach has put it in your training peaks. But you haven't felt excited about that obligation. So you've zoomed out and you've just gone and it's been a meditative run or something different like that. So I think if there are tasks that keep coming up that you feel obligation to do, and even when you zoom out, it's just a fucking nightmare, then that's, they're the tasks that I'm like, and that's what I always ask myself. I'm like, okay, why am I not enjoying this?
And you're asking yourself that question, right? Mm. And that's the, it goes back to the awareness piece, right? So at the cellular level, if on a given day you're not feeling it, right? And then the next day you're not feeling it again.
Mm.
And then, you know, now the whole week goes by and you're just not feeling it. Now you're feeling it in your body. Like, yeah. You know, because you know what it feels like to be excited about that thing. And if you're no longer excited about it, something has shifted. Either your relationship to that thing has shifted, or there's something that is gnawing at you because there's a bigger priority that needs your attention, perhaps. Mm. And you're committed to something that isn't really serving your values in a way that something else would. Or it's at the cost of something else.
Mm.
You know, when I was writing this book, there was a lot of sacrifice. And, you know, there were months and months and months that went by where I had to say no to many different things.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And what I realized was that in the beginning, at the cellular level, I didn't want to do it. But after a few months, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months went by, I started finding joy in that thing. So I guess this is also to say that, you know, there are things that we do that we may not enjoy. The beginning, there's resistance because it's really hard, right? It's really hard. Like running is hard, right? Yeah. I mean, Track Tuesday, it's hard.
It's as hard as you make it, mate.
Yeah, it, I mean, but...
My business goes if I sell more programs, that's mate. True. Tell them
it's not that hard. It's not that hard.
It's actually one thing we tell everyone. It's going to be really hard.
It's going to be hard because you're pushing the boundary of or you're stretching out of your comfort zone. And so let's drive it further in terms of, you know, feeling it at the cellular level. When you have that level of awareness and you're asking yourself those questions and you're journaling about it and you've got this feedback loop going and you're constantly asking yourself the question, why am I doing this? Is this aligned? Like on my calendar, for example, I have a standing note that says, is this aligned with your why? So every commitment that goes into my calendar, I see, that's the first thing I see before I accept it. Is this aligned with your why? If it's not, I try to get myself out of it. Or I try to, you know, see if there's another approach that I can take instead of putting it in my calendar for that 1 hour for the next week or 2 weeks or a month or maybe even a year, right? So just having that go through, you know, an awareness filter.
It's really cool. Yeah. You can see over on the wall, and you can't see this on the video version, but there's three plaques. One is what an Inner Fight coach is. One is our brand vision and our values. And the other is what the Inner Fight way is, what we actually want to achieve. And we spent... The one in the middle I came up with very early in the piece are values. And so to make decisions around that framework was easy. And then we spent quite a bit of time over the last few years defining what a coach is and defining what actually, like, because a lot of people would ask me, like, what is Inner Fight? What actually is it?
Yeah.
You know, and so now it's easy to go back to them and say, you know, it's service, is impact, it's community, it's coaching, you know, the thing, I hope I got that right. Yeah,
it's pretty accurate. It's
pretty accurate. It'd be a bit embarrassing if I couldn't. But the point is when we're sat here as when I'm sat as an individual or I'm sat with a leadership team or we're sat with coaches, it's exactly what you said that's on your calendar as like, okay, what was that? If we're, you know, as a coach, are you delivering world-class coaching? And, you know, are you excited? We had a, you'll enjoy this, so will the listeners. We had a coach in here a few weeks ago and great conversation, and you know, we're like, what causes you stress? And the coach was like, well, sometimes you guys. Okay, cool. Why do we cause you stress?
Radical candor.
and they were like, well, that I'm not going to hit my target. He said, where over on the wall there does it say about your target?
Mm.
And the coach was like, oh, it doesn't. So where's the stress coming from?
Yeah.
You know, and we're like, if you do that, does that excite you? And they're like, yeah, that excites me. If you do that, we'll take care of your target, because your target will be done.
Will be done. Yeah.
Which is but that's very cool. Yeah. So every time you get an invite to something or you start a meeting, does this fit with my why? With my why. Yeah.
With my values.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's this constant reminder, right? Mm. It's this constant reminder. And I show it to everybody. It's like, look, you know, try to put in these little, you know, forcing mechanisms around you. Like, that's a great way to remind yourself, like, what does this place stand for?
Yeah.
What are our values? Because when you're speaking to a coach, you can actually just point to the wall, right? It's up there.
Yeah.
It's not abstract.
Yeah. And it's consistent as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's consistent.
It keeps everyone aligned.
Yeah. It's something that, and I'm pretty sure you've got some thoughts on it because you've spent a lot of time in the wider corporate world and you understand how that works. A lot of corporates have stuff like that on the wall, and there's two issues, right? One issue is no one actually knows what it is. And therefore the second issue is, or the direct issue of that, is no one's following it. But the real issue is no one has that for themselves.
Mm.
Whereas one of the first things you said in the first few minutes of our conversation was how you have a set of values that you live your life by. So my question to you, mate, is why do you think people don't have this frame, this decision-making framework that leads to exactly what we're talking about, that leads to understanding intention, obligation, and actually being excited to do what we're doing as humans?
So I look at it from a relative basis, right? So if we look at most people we know 5 years ago, a lot of them would not have even thought of having values in place or having a purpose.
Mm.
But you fast forward a few years later, 3 years, 4 years later, now everyone's talking about it. Not everyone may have it in place, but I see it a little differently. I think people are, there's this collective awakening that's taking place around purpose. What is my why? Why am I doing what I'm doing? I think there's a greater level of self-awareness among people. And I think it's happening. But to answer your question, I think it really comes down to the people you surround yourself with. There's the saying, right? You're the average of the five people that you spend most time with. And it's cliche, but it's so true. That's why it's cliche, right? It's so true. I mean, most of the people around you are either thinking about having values or they already have it in place just by virtue of you modeling it consistently over and over and over again, right? So I think it really comes down to people that we surround ourselves with, information that we're consuming on social media, on Netflix, the books, the podcasts, whatever it is that we're exposed to, because we're a product of, I mean, before we started recording, we were talking about the environment, right? We're a product of our environment. Yeah. And so, yeah, so I think there's definitely a shift taking place. I feel it. I see it. I'm experiencing it. And I'm constantly talking about it because it has made my life better.
It's hard, though. We've come to hard a few times and we'll probably keep coming back to hard. And what I want to ask you to do is I want to ask you to think back to your 2010, 2012, 2014 self. Probably 2014, you were getting a lot better. But like you said, it was not a great time of your life. You speak openly about it. We spoke in the podcast. It's at that point, you didn't have the awareness that you have now, you were driven by something completely different.
The outer game.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I was driven by the what I call the outer game, which is the external scoreboard, right? The money, the cars, the watches, you know. Let's just put it in a bucket of, you know, materialism, right? That's what drove me because that was how everyone else around me kept score. And I realized that, you know, anyone from the outside looking in would say, okay, checked all the boxes, successful. But the reality was that internally I was at chaos within myself. I did not feel like I was living a life that was authentic to I don't want to say values, because I think I wasn't living a life of intention. Like the intention wasn't there. It was, I was driven by what everybody else was doing. I was measuring my life relative to what I had, relative to what people had around me. And it worked until it stopped working, you know. And I think a lot of people are still playing that game. But there has been a shift in the last, especially, you know, post-pandemic. I think there's this real awakening. But why didn't I have it at that point? I think, again, it comes down to environment. It really comes down to the people I was around and where they were on their journey and how I was influenced by that.
A lot of people live...
I didn't have inner fight then.
You didn't.
Yeah. And I think that would have completely shaped my environment.
But you didn't have inner fight then because you weren't ready for it.
Precisely. So
you would have walked into inner fight, and what resonated with you when you walked in 2016? It was 2016.
2016, you're right.
2017, yeah. When you walked in then, because you'd gone through... I mean, let's be dramatic. You'd gone through a transformation. You had. Well, let's not be dramatic. Let's be honest. You changed your life. Mm. What resonated with you then, like, I see it a lot. It's quite cool. Like, people walk in today and walk straight out.
Really?
Yeah. And then walk back in a few years. And the place is the same. The equipment's the same. I have a few grayer hairs. Everything's the same. The values are the same. Mm. Nothing's changed here, but suddenly the place works for people.
Yeah.
Because they've changed. If you'd have walked, if you'd have come where we were in 2010, we're down at Evolve on the end of the beach road there where the flag is, you would have walked out because you weren't ready.
I was not ready. You're right.
Because what you were seeing, what the game you were playing, you said it was the outer game.
Yeah.
And the outer game means nothing here. Everyone's got a nice car.
Yeah.
You turn up in a beautiful car and I'm stoked for you.
Yeah.
I don't want to get one.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying that everyone is on the same page, but it's, you know, so when someone who's still playing the outer game walks in and realizes there's no one to play with, it's boring.
Yeah. Yeah. Then they walk out.
They walk out.
Yeah.
And you've probably seen it, mate. Like, we're talking almost 8 years.
Yeah.
We've had the pleasure of having you with us.
Yeah.
Like, you can think of people, and some people have started, and then it's okay, and then things change, and then they come back.
Yeah, you're right. And it really comes down to that personal journey, right? It really, that's what it comes down to. And I think when you're ready, the right environment will find you. I mean, you know, going back to what you said earlier, people are probably listening, thinking, "What does that really mean?" Right? But I'm a true believer in vibration, frequency, energy. Right? And when you're vibrating at a certain frequency, you will attract the same frequency.
Mm.
This is quantum physics.
I was going to say,
it's science.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it is quantum physics, science. It's not a study that a pharmaceutical company have just made up to sell more products in 2023 and 2024. We're actually talking about concepts that are proven over hundreds of years.
It's measured. It's measured. You go to an event. I've been following Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Right.
And at his events, they measure the energy in the room, Marcus.
Wow.
On day one, on a 7-day week-long retreat, on day one, they will measure the energy in the room. And then they'll go through the work. It's called the work. You do the meditation, the mindfulness, and you're doing breath work, and you're doing a lot of self-work, and it's really hard. And you see people walking out the door. They're just not ready for it. It's just too much. They're getting triggered. Things are coming from the past. They're just not ready for that environment. Same idea of people walking into the gym and walking out, right?
Yes.
They realize that, okay, this is going to take work, and I'm not ready for it. And then they measure the energy on day 3 in the room, and you can see the graphs have shifted. And then they do it again on day 7, on the last day. And it's exponentially different from what it was on day 1. So, yeah, the vibration is a real thing.
To a lot of people, though, it's quite woo-woo. You speak to people, I mean, it is changing, but you speak to people about things that you and I often talk about you know, meditation, about energy, vibration, all of these things that we've spoken about now. You know, what are you grateful for today? What are you excited about today? How fulfilled do you feel? Everyone's like, woo, 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 woo.
Mm.
Why do you think that is?
I think it goes back to what you said earlier. They're just not ready for it.
Mm.
Right? It's not where they are in their journey.
It's tricky, isn't it?
It is, and at the same time, it's not, because we all have our own journey. And, you know, like the hardest thing to see is a family member who you just know, okay, they're going through challenges. They're going through trauma. Maybe it's a small T trauma, not a big T trauma, but they're going through a difficult time. And you know exactly what's going to help them. You've got the solution because it's worked for you. So you're coming from experience. But they're just not ready for it. They're just not ready for it.
How do you... We spoke in 694 about your family and what family means to you. You've brought up two young gentlemen, or we can call them gentlemen. They're on their way to being gentlemen. Do you let them burn their fingers in the fire?
That's my approach. Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's and I get a lot of this is a constant debate. Do we try to help? Do we put guardrails in place so that they don't burn their fingers, or do we let them, you know, burn their fingers so they actually learn?
Mm.
And this is something that we keep going back and forth on, but more forth on, but it's definitely something that I'm a big believer in, is, you know, there's no substitute to experience.
Like,
if I tell
hard,
you what
though.
To do based on my experience, it's going to resonate. It's going to get to a certain depth, but it's only when you walk the line will you really truly know and really be able to extract the lessons.
Mm. That must be tough.
It's tough. It's tough. Especially since you know, you can see it very clearly, right? You know, like, we went to a basketball game recently, and I could see that the work that was being put in, because now one of my sons, I won't say who, he's playing at an elite level.
Right.
In basketball. And I could see based on the input, he wasn't going to get the kind of playing time from the coach or from the team, because everyone else, you could see week on week, their bodies were transforming. And you could, you just feel the confidence of these teenagers as they're walking onto the court. And you wonder, where's that confidence coming from? It's because they're doing the work. You can see, it's very evident in how their bodies are transforming that they're doing the work. And I could see where it was going, but I tried not to intervene, because it's important that he goes through that experience where he gets benched and he feels the burn, and that then lights up that fire within. Yeah.
There's a lot to be said about that. I spoke to a lady, Heather Harris, a few weeks ago, and about education and kids and the way that the system is quite rewarding. Mm. But what you said there plays directly into the way that I see it. Not being a parent, it's very easy to say and probably not very valid to say it, but like, kids need to be benched for that experience. But as a parent, you react positively. Have you always
reacted? I didn't react positively. In this situation, it hurt. Mm. I did have a conversation with the coach. Mm. Because I am, full disclosure, I'm torn. Because right. I do feel that, you know, if when you bench a child, right, it has an impact on their confidence. It has an impact on their confidence. And even if you were to play him for a couple of minutes, right, that does, you know, has a huge benefit on the confidence of that individual. So I'm torn. This is something that I'm still learning. It's difficult. I can't say that, you know, I'm on one side of that approach completely, because it's my child, right? Mm. It's personal. It's hard.
You seem to navigate it well, though.
I'm trying to find that balance. I'm trying to find that balance.
It sounds like you're doing good. Thank you. And I'm sure you see a lot of parents that are a lot less calm than you.
Yeah. I see that.
Yeah, you mentioned it before. You've spent the last 2 years putting together your thoughts, I guess, in a book format. What inspired you
three and a half years.
Has it been 3.5 years? Wow. What inspired you to start that?
So a few years ago, when in the early days of social media, one of the first posts I put up was a picture of me having my last drink. Did I share the story with you? My last drink.
Yeah.
Someone happened to take a photo of it.
Right.
And I have the picture, and I, like, if I were to show it to you, you'd be like, that's not you.
Who is this guy?
Who's this guy? this is not the guy who's sitting in front of me. And I put it up, and I spoke about my battle with alcohol, and how it was something that challenged me over the years, and how I got to a point wherein, you know, I made the decision to stop drinking, to go alcohol free. It was a simple post, and I got a flood of messages. And a few of them started asking me questions. And then they asked more questions. Then they asked more questions. And next thing I know, you know, 2 months have gone by, and I'm having a regular DM exchange with, you know, a few individuals. And the messages that were coming in were, you know, you changed my life. Like, this post empowered me, or gave me the awareness that I can do it too, and that it's the best thing for me at this point in my life, just like how you described it. And it's in my book. That was the first incident. fast forward a few years later, I'm giving a talk, and this talk was, there were several speakers, and the theme was, you know, your biggest mess ups, like the biggest mess up that you've had in your life, like that's the talk, right? So TEDx style, you're on stage and you're talking about, you know, the biggest disaster that you've had in life. And I spoke about, and there were some incredible speakers there. There was a guy who was on a plane that crashed, and he's talking about how, you know, what he did minutes before the plane crashed, the calls he made, what that conversation was like, just really vulnerable, you know, like raw, you know, experience that was being shared. It was just incredible. And there were all sorts of different speakers there. And I shared a story that was a seminal moment where I made a decision to chase the outer game instead of the inner game. And the price that I paid, so basically the decision was, you know, I was at a crossroads where a client called me saying, you know, we need you to come to London for a meeting. And I looked at the calendar and Jasmine was due 3 weeks out. And I had to make that, you know, big time decision. And I jumped on that plane reluctantly, right? With her reluctant approval, I jumped on that plane to chase the deal. And I didn't make it back on time. Completely missed the birth of my first child. So that moment, you know, when you're told that it's a boy, it's a girl, I didn't have that feeling, that experience. And I'm sharing this, and after the talk, I got approached by a few people who weren't in this same situation, but had moments where they messed their priorities up. Like they went with something that wasn't of a higher priority or wasn't aligned with their values. And the impact that they that had on them, like hearing that firsthand and saying, and hearing like them telling me that, look, you know, this helped us really understand how we need to realign our priorities, how we're saying yes to things and what we're saying no to is of higher value. And so I thought, you know what? Maybe it's time to write a book. Because this is going to help people. And if anything, it's for me to also heal from what everything that's happened. You know, it was a very cathartic. I've always journaled. I've been journaling for 15 years. And every time I write something down, there's this cathartic release. And I thought, okay, well, what if I do that with the book? Like, who would I be after I've written the book? Like, what kind of transformation would I go through in terms of healing from all the wounds and all the trauma?
It's interesting you say that, because it's almost like the last bit, the whole thing is interesting, right, obviously, but that last bit, because a lot of the time I think people write books for the outer game, to New York Times bestseller, whatever, charts, I don't know how it goes, sell a million copies, make $1 million. But it sounds like this is just your journal.
This is
not just.
Without a doubt, it's my journal.
Wow.
And you know, when people ask me, like, you know, should I write a book? I think everyone should write a book. If you're journaling, you already have a book. You have a book right there and you're remarkable.
Yeah.
Right? You've got a book. It's there. It's just about putting it together in a manner that flows. That's it. The book's there. The content's there.
So should someone the buy message. Your book? Or why should someone buy your book?
Why should someone buy my book? I think comes down to intention. My intention is to share stories that where I felt stuck. So who is this book really for? The book is for people who the underdogs, like people who feel that they don't belong, who may have a little bit of imposter. You show up, you know, maybe it's a track Tuesday and you feel like everyone else is a lot faster than I am. Do I really deserve to be here? Am I really in group five or am I really in group six or seven? You know, all that chatter that I have. And so it's for the person who feels that they don't belong, like the imposter syndrome, which is a real thing in every facet of our lives, right? It's for people who feel that they're stuck, that there's another level. They know there's another level, but they just can't seem to access it. What are the tools to access that next level? So it's a guide. It's a blueprint of how to figure out, going back to your question, how do you figure out what you want? I've got 35 questions that are backed by quantum linguistics and years of science around psychology specifically on how to really peel the layers to get to the essence of what it is that you want. It's also for people who are now winning the inner game but need a structure to, or a book. I've structured this book in a way wherein it's a book that, it took me 3.5 years because I wanted it to be really simple. And to birth something that's simple is complex.
100%.
So it's a book that I would read every year. Because there are all these different interventions and exercises that I can do in one book. So I've collected and compressed everything that I've learned in the last 15 years that have been transformative for me and for people around me into this one guide, a blueprint.
Could it have taken shorter, but why did it take 3.5 years?
Yeah, great question. So It would have been a lot quicker had it. So I was working with, initially, I was working with a ghostwriter. The intention wasn't right. So like I said, it's been a journey. I've learned so much about myself. And we were working on it together, and we got it to twice the size of this book right now. This is 240 pages, it was over 600 pages. And I went to a publisher and we were going through the process of publishing the book. And this comes down to really like signs. I'm a big believer in signs. And we're going through this process of editing the book and getting to, you know, the book cover and the whole journey of getting the book from manuscript to a book in hand. And on the 59th minute of the 11th hour, the publisher, there were two partners in this company, had a massive fallout. And the company was on the verge of bankruptcy. And I get a call from my relationship manager, and he said, "Darren, look, I'm sorry, but we're not going to be able to publish your book. This just happened." And the first thing I did was cry. The second thing I did was read my manuscript again. And then I read it again, and I read it again. And I realized that, look, you know what? No, there's something about this that doesn't resonate. So I went through the whole process all over again. Rewrote from a blank screen and wrote this book from scratch.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's why you've changed the title.
I changed the title. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Everything changed.
Is the message and is what it's brought to you similar though? Or what you wanted it to bring to you? Stick with the first one. The message, is it the same or is it different? Have you written two books or is it one book?
I've written two books.
Wow.
The message of this book is really all about taking on things that are uncomfortable hence the title, Bring It On. And it's about having a very clear vision. Like, what is it that you want? What do you want to achieve? And why do you want to achieve it? Like, what gets you up in the morning? Why do you do what you do? Right? So that's the message. It's really about, going back to what you said earlier, it's about self-awareness.
That's cool.
It's about, you know, my intention of writing this book is to help people become more self-aware by sharing the level and the journey of how I was sleepwalking to having some level of awareness.
And not the sleepwalking in the way that you might think about it, folks.
No. Yeah.
So you commit 3.5 years to your life.
Endurance.
It's endurance.
It's endurance.
And you can commit to endurance and you commit to your family. You said it earlier, you say no to a whole heap of things. The book is done. It's here on the table. Is there a gap in your life of time that now gets filled in a different way?
So the gap that the book created is now being filled around creating awareness around the book. Mm. So the book journey continues. It's just a different part of the journey. It's now trying to get people to experience the book. And with me in my life right now, I don't seem to have gaps.
You wake up in a rush, mate.
I don't wake up in a rush, but I live a full life. Mm. I live a full life. I'm training for our Ironman Austria at the moment. I've got a book that I'm in the middle of launching. You know, there's a lot of things going on at the moment. And that's a choice that I've made. Like, I was having this conversation with a client who decided that they were going to start coaching me. And I really appreciated it because it gave me, it forced me to reflect. And what she said was that, you know, people take a whole year to launch a book. People take a whole year and just focus on a full distance Ironman. People take a whole year to go through a Dr. Joe Dispenza, you know, Neurochange Solutions certification, which is a 12-month journey. People take a whole year to just come back from, you know, Everest Base Camp and just reflect back on that trip. Like, you're doing it all at once. Like, maybe you need to slow down. Mm. And she was right to a certain extent. But when I think about why I'm doing it, I have a very clear intention and it's aligned with how I feel and why, you know, it doesn't seem like it's, I'm not doing it out of obligation. I'm doing it because I want to do it.
Do you feel though, because you've just sparked a thought and it's kind of, it's beautiful because it's all coming back around to where we started with time. You do have a lot going on and society for the most part tells us to have a lot going on. You sit down at most stages of the year, but more prevalently at the start or at the end of the year, what are your goals for the year? And, you know, if you've only got one, which is to be more hydrated, which if you nailed your hydration, you'd actually have an amazing life. People are like, oh, is that all? It's too simple. It's this, that, and the other. But if we put that into context of what you're saying, like just two of those things, training for an Ironman and launching a book, talking about a book and helping people with the book is huge. Yes, you like these things, but how do you decide what the balance, like what's enough, not enough, and too much?
Mm. So with the Ironman, with my first one, I came out of it thinking that there were a lot of sacrifices. I made a lot of sacrifice on the journey toward the starting line for the first one. In terms of sacrifices at work, sacrifice with the family, sacrifices with friends, sacrifice with, you know, every facet of life. When I got pulled to do the second one, I felt this internal drive, this pull to do number two. I thought to myself, this time I'm going to do it because I want to, for two reasons. One, because there's still that fear. Why do I still fear this? I've done it. Like, what's it about training for a full distance Ironman that feels so uncomfortable? So that's the first reason. Like, I want to be able to overcome that discomfort. The second reason was, I want to prove to myself that I can train for a long distance event and not sacrifice other facets of my life. Like, I can do it in a way that is, I could take a balanced approach. And if the time on the board, you know, is another, you know, 2 hours or an hour longer, that's a choice I've made. Like, I want to be able to enjoy it this time. The first time I enjoyed it, I did. But there were sacrifices. And I don't think there needs to be massive amount of sacrifice. You're always going to sacrifice. But one thing I realized this time, the sacrifices I made were things that were falling away anyway. They were ready. They were just holding on to my life. I was just ready to shake it off, you know?
I think that's what I was going to say. Like, it's interesting because a lot of people see, okay, I'm going to commit to writing a book. I'm going to commit to Ironman. I've got to sacrifice other stuff. What do you really want?
Yeah.
Is that, because it's like,
is it a sacrifice?
Should it feel like a sacrifice? It's like what we were saying about obligation.
Yeah.
If you want to do something, it should never feel like you're obliged to do it.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you choose to do an Ironman, now it's, it could be claimed to be a little bit different family-wise, but unfortunately, your kids want to spend less time with you because they're spending more time with their friends because they're growing up. They're becoming young gentlemen.
Absolutely.
So it's a really, for me, it's always a really interesting equation when it's sacrifice, because it's like, do you really want to do this thing? Are you, and it goes back to what we were saying.
That's such a great point, the word sacrifice. Is it really a sacrifice?
Is it?
Yeah. That's so true. I think when I say sacrifice, I mean, when I think about that word, what I mean by that is it's going to be difficult. There's going to be sacrifices where I'm going to have to say no to certain things that were part of my life. Mm. Like, okay, you know, I have someone that I spend an hour with every month because I'm mentoring them, but maybe now that's going to be once every 2 months, right? That's a sacrifice.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, you're sacrifice, or maybe that's not the right word, but maybe it's a choice. It's a choice.
Choice.
It's a choice.
But will you,
it's empowering.
When you meet them every second month, will you be excited? Will you be all in? And will
far
you
have more excited? 100%. Yeah, so then, absolutely. You're maximizing.
So who's the time. Winning? Both of you.
We're both winning. Absolutely.
You're achieving your own personal, your own, like another silo of your goals, because I'm sure one silo of your goals is like we said, is helping people. That's why you wrote the book.
Yeah.
But you're also, it's an interesting scenario. And I think it also comes back to a lot of awareness, but it's just something I hear a lot with people, that it's like, okay, is it a sacrifice or isn't it a sacrifice?
Mm.
And does it, if it's feeling, and that's what I think, especially with endurance sports, there's this constant payoff, because I'm going to train for an Ironman. Coach has told me it's 15 hours a week, or I'm going to write a book. Publishers told me I need to commit this much time, or I'm going to do a Joe Dispenza and it's a 12-month course and I need to do 12 hours. So something's got to go.
Yeah.
If it's constantly, I've got to get rid of these things and I don't want to, then is it the time to do the book, the Ironman, or the course?
Mm.
When you're ready to let one of these things go and feel completely at ease with it and just slot this other beautiful thing into your life, which you're uber excited about because of what you said, it's hard, it'll challenge you, it'll teach you.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Then you're in a, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know me, mate, I just play around with silly ideas.
Maybe, no, maybe, I mean, at that moment, it's again, goes back to self-awareness that, okay, you know what, it's time to actually exit or move away from this. Or maybe there's just a higher priority or something that's really pulling you that you're more excited about, right? So it's, you know, one of my mottos to myself is I always say, follow your highest excitement.
Yes.
Right? Success is not guaranteed, but excitement is.
But if you're excited, your chances of being successful go through the roof.
100%. Right? Like, 100%. You know? Yeah.
And if you're waking up to train for an Ironman or to write a book and 5 days from seven, you're not excited, you're nothing at a cellular level, you're probably on the wrong.
Yeah. And that's what I told, going back to the conversation I was having with a friend of mine who was like, there's so much you're doing. But really, to me, the book, I'm not trying to, the book is going to get to people who it's meant to get to. I truly believe that. I don't need to stand, you know, I don't need to go to every bookstore, do a book signing. It's not about that. That's 3D. That's like Newtonian physics. That's like moving matter from one place to another. Like, that's not the game I'm playing. I'm trying to just move into it with ease. I look at this as an endurance project. Like, endurance has been such a great mentor for me because it's given me so much in terms of a lens on how to look at other aspects of my life. This is not a sprint. I'm not trying to get to 10,000, 100,000. No, this is a long game. Like, you know, I'm going to keep talking about it as long as people are going to listen. As long as people put a mic in front of me, I'll keep talking about it.
That's a very cool thought. Like, it's been 4 years since we had a chat on the show before. We talk in other times, guys, don't worry. But it'd be actually quite interesting to have the same book on the table in 4 years' time and to see what it's giving on so many different levels.
I'll put it on my calendar.
Does it fit with your why?
It does, absolutely.
Darren,
I've got a question for you before we wrap up.
Go for it.
May I ask the host a question?
Okay. Yeah, you've asked me loads. It's been quite therapeutic.
I think this is something that people will get value from. A lot of people who listen to the show obviously know you and look at you as a role model.
That's very kind.
As do I.
Thank you.
What is the hardest part about being Marcus Smith?
Depends which lens I'm looking through. I think that's a question that I probably need a lot more time for, is the first lens. The second lens is, family is number one. My dad and my sister and my wife, they're my family. And I think, and I've always, definitely since my crash in 2018, it becomes more prevalent. The hardest part is probably making sure I'm what I want to be to my family. Because nothing else matters when it's all said and done. You saw that with the birth of your son. That's what changed your life, to be honest, mate.
Yeah.
I saw that in a flash in 2018. I saw it with my late mother. Nothing else is important. So the hardest part of my life is my family silo. Everything else is actually quite easy.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it doesn't cause you stress. Running this place, endurance challenges. We get so granular.
Mm.
And we get so, we said it at the top of the show, we get so zoomed in that we get stressed. But when you zoom out, what's actually hard?
Yeah. Yeah, when there's distance, your relationship with that thing changes, right? Yeah, that's such a great point. I have to tell you that that every time you put up a photo or a reflection about your late mother, it made me really self-aware of my relationships. Mm. So thank you for that.
Oh, it's and that's what I try to do, mate. I mean, the tables here of my crashed bicycle wheels, so people can't get away from it, you know. And to some people, it's boring, you know. Some people, the marathons is boring, but it's the same as your book, and it's therapy, mate.
Yeah.
Like, I started the show so I could speak to people and learn. It sounds very, very self-centered, but. You know, if you listen carefully to what you said, the book is your therapy. It's your healing.
Yeah.
And if someone reads it, great. This conversation is for me and for you. And someone's going to listen, and great. We started the building. I started to help someone. I was going to benefit. And it sounds, again, selfish, but I ran to Brooksy's house. And it was in my mind, mate. Because it has to be 50-50.
Mm.
We can't be constantly imbalanced. Yeah. If I'm getting more from this than you're getting, it's not a fair deal.
Yeah.
We spent an hour together and you know, so I was going to run 3K to Brooksy's house and I was going to help him, but I knew I was going to get a workout. Mm. So there has to be this. Yeah, it's interesting, but that's a very good question. And I think that's why it needs time, and it's hard to answer.
Mm.
Everyone should ask that question. If you're driving your car now, just think about it. Darren's coming. Literally, I had no questions and he's given the best question. But it's a great question. Like, what's the hardest part of being you? And when you really zoom out, it's the key people.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say it's not letting them down. Because then it's from a weird, but you want to be there.
Mm.
You want it, like, and you know, it goes back to time. You're not always going to be there. I'm not always going to be able to sit with my dad, you know, but when he's here, he has a place in building 3 and he comes over every morning and we sit in the cafe and we have a coffee. And that's like, if I'm an, it doesn't matter. We sit. We talk about nothing.
Yeah.
Tour de France, Giro at the moment. You know, his sink was blocked the other day. The weather in England. You know, Dad, I don't care if it's cold in York. You know, but what else is actually important?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Who cares about your FTP?
Yeah.
Who cares how fast you can run 3K? That's not hardship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People, family. Yeah.
That's all it is.
Well said.
Relationships. Those really close to you.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, and again, it sounds selfish, but you have to take care of the core. So it's easier to take care of the wider people. It's easier to take care of that long lost friend, because that long lost friend needs, you know, a message on friendsreunited.com if that still exists every 12 years. But the hard thing is keeping that core together.
Yeah.
That was hard. That was a hard question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you a lot. Mate, that was awesome. I wish you the best for the book. Where, if people are interested, where can they get it?
When it's launched, people will be able to get it on that site called amazon.ae.
I don't know if anyone knows it, but check it out on Amazon. Bring it on, Darren.
Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Marcus.
Cheers.